Welcome to the Real Estate Dads. We've got with us Bryant Aplis with Green Elephant Development, a massive entrepreneur with a ton of wins and some fantastic wisdom on mentorship, what got him to where he is, businesses that went well, businesses that didn't go well, and how he interacts with those things and also being a dad. Bryant, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Business beast, dad.
There you go, dad, baby.
How old is your kid?
She is turning 7 in a couple weeks, August 13th.
And just one, just a girl, right? So girl dad.
Correct. Yep. That's what they're calling it these days. I'll take it.
So we like to, you know, explore just the intersection of business and dadding and, you know, kind of get your take on that. So why don't you just start off with giving us a little like background on, you know, business and then starting a family.
Sure. So a little bit about my business background. It started early. It was originally my first sales job was at Blockbuster Video. Really funny story. I just got back from Bend, Oregon last week with my partner, Cody Sperber. We took our ladies and we had a week without any of our kids, and it was awesome. And we visited on our way before we finished the trip to the Blockbuster Video, which is the last one in the world.
Yeah, that's open. Yeah. Still there.
Yeah, still there. And so it was so cool.
You can still rent a movie.
Yeah, it was so cool. But you got to be kind and rewind.
Wow.
So it was just so funny to see, just full circle of how I started my first sales job at Blockbuster Video, and we were pre-selling movies that would come out. And I just really liked the approach of sales. And I started when I was 16, when I got that job, and I was top sales at Blockbuster for 3 years. And then I, you know, pretty much got top sales at Cutco, which was the world's finest cutlery, and selling cutlery in houses. And then I took top sales to Enterprise Rent-A-Car, where I interned in college. I went to Washington State University and double majored in business management and HR. And if they would have had a sales degree, I would have taken that because I love sales. They had marketing, but they didn't have, you know, sales.
Yeah.
And I ended up starting a apparel business in my sophomore year of college, where I did sales to other groups and clubs on campus, whether it be sororities, fraternities, intramural clubs, and I would make, you know, hundreds of sweatshirts and t-shirts, and I would find a print shop an hour and a half away in Spokane, and I would figure out how to contract the work through them. They would buy the merchandise and I would get the sales, and then I was literally collecting checks from, you know, these chapters for $5,000-$10,000, and my invoice to my contract decorator was like 60% of what I was collecting. So I was making six figures in college at 19, 20 years old, going through college campuses, just recruiting rep ambassadors for every single club and group on college campuses. And by the time I had graduated, I had expanded to University of Washington, University of Idaho, Washington State University. And just Washington State University alone has 26 fraternities and 13 sororities. That's 39 accounts. Hmm. And so University of Idaho was in Moscow, 8 miles away. They had another 18, you know, accounts. And each sorority has 200 members in it. So when they order a shirt for them and their date, for a date dash or a cruise or a buy-ad, it's 400 sweatshirts, and I was making about $8 a sweatshirt. So you could do the math of how awesome it was. So I just really fell in love with sales. I put myself through college, no college debt, graduated in 4 years, you know, and took over ASU, U of A, NAU, USC, UCLA, and just continued through California and Arizona, Oregon, Washington, and the Northwest and the Southwest. And then within 5 years, I was top five in the country for Greek licensed apparel nationwide. And so a lot of people don't know that story about me, is that I've always enjoyed building, you know, camaraderie between reps and affiliates and marketing and sales and providing value in exchange for monetary gain. And just some of my accounts were Fortune 100 businesses, Verizon, T-Mobile, NBA, NFL Super Bowls. We did 8 NFL Super Bowls in a row, Team USA Olympics, Coca-Cola, PetSmart. So I know what it takes to deliver. You know, the funniest order that I ever did was these bag tossing things where we delivered them to all 1,680 PetSmarts across the country. And, you know, they basically set up the bag toss and, you know, in their stores. And so any PetSmart that I went into, I could see my product no matter where it was. And we had to figure out how to make all these, you know, bag tossing machines and put them in all the stores and get them delivered. And it was really awesome. Their largest order with me was, I think, 60,000 shirts. And we had to, you know, divide them across all 1,600 locations and separate them and pack them and get them all sent out. So, you know, time and delivery kind of carried over into my real estate business, because when we were working with, you know, deliveries and timelines for our fix and flips, and understanding that we have, you know, a strict timeline and a strict budget, and we need to over deliver, and we need to make sure this quality product gets done in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks, or our new builds. I've built, you know, 50 new builds throughout Paradise Valley and Arcadia, all 2.5, 3.5, 4.5 million dollar exits. And so I've learned that, you know, you don't rush stuff, you don't take shortcuts. And in life, I'm trying to instill that into my daughter, that, you know, even though it's the easy way, that doesn't mean it's the right way. So let's look at both, you know, paths and choose which one's really going to get us the end result that we're after.
So what are the dates for these things? So like, when did you first start selling to your college? And then
great question. So I'm currently 43 years old. I went to school and graduated in 2002. And then I exited my merchandise company. We had 80 something employees, about 40,000 square feet manufactured business warehouse. And we just had all the machines, and we were the actual manufacturer of all the textiles, the screen print, the embroidery, the dye sublimation, the cut and sew. And we would just, you know, do everything in-house, all our graphic designers, sales reps, printers. And so I exited that in October of 2017. And that's really, I took like, I don't know, you know, as entrepreneurs, we take about, you know, 6 weeks off before we have our next venture. And so I started buying some deals off of my buddy, Jesse Burrell, who now owns Batch Leads, which is one of the largest data providers out there. And he was wholesaling at the time. I knew Jesse because he had moved from Washington to Arizona because he used to date my little sister for a few years in high school. And I, you know, wanted to make sure that he had a place here in Arizona. So I had him move into one of my houses, and we were roommates for a little bit. And sure enough, he was selling me wholesale houses. And one of the houses that he sold me, my first three fix and flips, ended up having to be a new build. And so I got started with new build by accident, because I thought I was just going to be doing 1,000 square foot addition. But by the time we looked at everything, it was literally a scrape and leave one wall up, and you're going to have a way better exit doing it this way. And I didn't realize, you know, at the time that I was, you know, going to be scraping an entire house. I thought, I didn't know how it worked. I just thought, there's an existing 1,400 square foot house. Let's make it 2,400 square feet, and let's be in and out of this thing in 4 to 6 months and do some over the counter permits. And that's what I was told from other people. And it wasn't like that. So it's a curse and a blessing at the same time. That house I ended up doing all the wrong things on, and making about $10,000 on a new build. And now I look back at that house of what I could have done differently. And if I didn't take shortcuts, and if I would have, you know, gotten with the right mentors and understood the process a little bit better, I wouldn't have not only done that deal, but I would have done it differently. And now that same deal is worth $500,000 more than I sold it for back in 2018. And we're in 2024 now. And I could have burned it, got all my cash back out, and turned it into a short-term rental because there was no HOA, and killed it. And I just didn't do that. And that was the second time.
Did you have investor money, or was it just all your money?
No, it was capital that I used from selling my business. Okay. So when I sold my business, I had a multiple seven-figure exit, and I didn't have any debt. I never took any investor money for 17 years in my apparel business. It was one of those things where I literally just paid off my mortgages on my multiple buildings, commercial buildings that I had where my manufacturing took place. I pretty much owned the block. I had one building, two buildings next to each other, three. And so I just paid those off. And then those have paid me for the last 7 years monthly. So I've been getting, you know, multiple six figures of income just as a single tenant, triple net lease coming in on my commercial side.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, speaking of the building, I just sold it about 2 weeks ago for a couple million and got a nice check.
Nice.
Awesome.
So what's your dad life like? You know, I mean, you're a busy dude. You're busy as hell. You got your daughter. So how are you making time for that and showing her?
You know, a cool thing is I started her in soccer when she was 4 years old, because people that know me know that I'm an avid like soccer player. You can't tell by the way I look right now, but man, it is just one of those things where, you know, before I blew out my ankle, man, I was out there playing soccer up until 41 years old, 42 years old. And I started when I was 4 years old, 5 years old. So I got about 37 years of soccer in me, Junior Olympics, and, you know, being a place kicker for Washington State University.
Oh, wow.
Walked on there. So I've always had a passion for sports and being athletic. It just goes to show that when I started her in soccer, I was like, cool, this is how it's going to work. I love soccer. She's going to love soccer. She was chasing butterflies. I think she got maybe 30 minutes of playing time the entire season because she didn't want to start. She wanted to be on the sideline in the shade. It was in the summer in Arizona, and she wanted to chase butterflies. So I said, okay, I don't know if this is going to work. The actual pitcher day, she was crying. I was holding her, and she's like crying in the actual pitcher day in our uniforms, and that's what's framed in her room. And I'm just like, this is awesome. So I can't force a child to do stuff that they're not ready to do. So instead, I took a step back and I said, how can I embrace what she would like to do? So she's now doing gymnastics. She's now doing ballet and piano class, and she's doing swimming and all these things that she loves to do. And seeing her smile and understand that, you know, life is all about the pleasures of actually doing what you want and figuring out a way for the money to happen along the way, right? So when I have these certain small moments with her to teach her about, hey, this is a really cool idea to do a lemonade stand. We can go outside and we can sell lemonade for $1.50 a cup, and we can add cookies. And she has her piggy bank and she has her different ways. And I've set her up with, she actually already owns a house in Maricopa. One of those houses that I bought from Jesse. I burned out of it and got all my cash out of it. It turned into a rental. We put it into her trust under her name, and she has it. So when she turns 18, it's on a 15-year mortgage. It's going to be completely paid off, and she'll have the opportunity to make, you know, $2,500 a month income, and rents are going to go up in the next 15 years. Or she'll have the opportunity to, you know, pull out some cash. And, you know, it's really awesome because her college is already taken care of. Yet I figured out a way where I can still cash flow on the property and get, you know, everything else that I needed out of it on the burr, but I don't have to worry about her being set up. So that house right now, it's valued at about, you know, $350,000. I'm thinking in, you know, another, call it, you know, 12 years or whatever, when she's 18, she'll be able to have that house be, you know, at close to, you know, $600,000, and it will be free and clear for her.
Might be $1 million by then.
It will. 3 to 5% a year is what we expect, and we got another, you know, call it 12 years. So
it's conservative. Yeah. You know, with the amount of government spending, I think we're going to be spending 20.
But it's so unique that, you know, you can do the small things. Like, that doesn't cost me anything. I actually make money on it every single month as a rental.
Yeah.
And it's paying down a 15-year note. And it's just, I burned out and already got my cash out. So it's one of those things where real estate's really a game changer, because my dad never handed me over, you know, $1 million when I turned 18, and she's not getting it all. It's written in there where that it's $100,000 per year for the first 10 years that she's able to tap into. So she'll be 28 by the time she needs to figure it all out. But that's her first 100 is when she goes to college. So it is what it is. It's really cool that you can use real estate as a tool. And so she knows, I've taken her to the house. I've showed her that we're going to have to fix the roof, you know, and, you know, that it doesn't have a pool because rentals, you don't want to have pools because of liability. And she asked the right questions. And she actually comes to a lot of my fix and flips and different houses with me. And she is just, you know, I have all the documentation of her and photos and videos of her just hanging out and saying, Daddy, let's paint this wall. Let's do this. Because I ask her, what do you want to do to this ugly house to make it pretty? And it's so cool to see her throw out ideas already.
Okay. So I got to ask, because it sounds like you just got home runs, like home run, home run, home run. What are the obstacles like along the way? Like when you're building this apparel company that turned into because you did more than just clothing at the end, right? You had other products that you were selling to test markets.
Yeah, there's 300,000 promotional products when you're in the ASI industry. It's a big industry.
So what things did you overcome along that? Because I got to imagine, because you're doing it on your own.
Sure.
I didn't give you money.
Yeah.
And no. So you had to figure this out on your own. So
I want to say that my dad did give me a little bit of money. He gave me $50 to go buy business cards at Kinko's.
Okay.
Yeah. So I paid him back.
Okay.
Did you pay him more than $50 back or just the 50?
You know, when it was time for me to run and figure out what cash flow was, I was like, holy crap, I owe my vendors. My customers aren't paying me. Dad, what do I do? I was 21, 22 years old because at the end of the college, that making money in college was no problem because I didn't give them the product until they gave me the check, right? And I didn't have to pay my vendor until the product was done, right? But it was no net 30 terms. I didn't even know what net terms was. It was like, listen, if you don't have the check at pickup, you can't give them the product and it's our property, right? So I'm like, all right. So it was never a accounts receivable game in college. However, after college, when I actually really took this on, right? And I'm no longer a college student and this is a real thing that I'm taking seriously as a career, I started realizing that these companies, they don't want to pay you when you deliver the product. They have this thing called net 30 terms and credit applications. And I didn't even really know what credit was. That was another thing that my dad and I spoke about and laugh about today is I couldn't even buy a laptop on credit at Best Buy when I graduated college. I had been making all this money in college, paying for everything in cash and checkbooks. And I didn't even have a credit card, not one, because I didn't take a student loan. I didn't know what credit was. I didn't know what debt was. It was always like, I'm not buying it unless I have the cash, right? So I didn't even have enough credit to get a laptop. So when it was time to open up real vendor accounts, I had to ask my dad, hey, how does this credit thing work? And why didn't you teach me about credit? I was like, Dad, you've done an amazing job raising four kids. My parents are married 51 years today. Bless their heart.
Today?
74. June 30th was their anniversary. I just got back from visiting my mom and dad in Washington last week. It was just so funny because my mom and dad did such an amazing job raising us, but they never taught us about credit. And so I go back to, you know, what can I teach my daughter? What can I do differently that my parents didn't do? And that was get a house, get a 15-year note on it, have that be something that they can, you know, be financially free the rest of their life off of, but I can, you know, monetarily gain in, you know, during those adolescent years all the way through 18. It really wasn't a lot of work to burr on a house and give it to her. And then additionally, how to establish credit. So we haven't started just yet. I know that you can start at that young age. But either way, credit was important. So I had to use my dad's credit cards in order to pay my vendors because I didn't have enough thing. And so my dad and I made an agreement that the 1% cash back on the credit card would go to him. And so you asked, like, did you pay him back anything more than the $50 for the Kinko's? My dad made easily over six figures getting that 1% cash back because it took me so long to establish credit. My cards were only $5,000. And my dad had a $100,000 balance card. So I just always used his Amex and his Capital One Spark and all his cards because it was just easier. And so I felt like, all right, my dad's making money. So my dad was collecting, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a month just by me running up $300,000-$400,000 a month in vendor bills. So I was doing $1 million months and it was a very big cash flow heavy business when I started scaling.
So aside from the kind of cash flow problem that you had, or the credit problem that you had to figure out, did you ever really like having like an oh shit moment? Like, man, everything is going to collapse if I don't.
Yeah. So I thought that there would be a time where you don't have to work so hard for money. And I heard about this thing called passive money, not active money. And so I got a call one day from an oil and gas company out of Texas. Their company was called Ameritech Securities. And I have no problem saying it because they're crooks. And some people that are in oil and gas today, you know, God bless you. But my experience with oil and gas was, okay, so you're telling me that I'm going to buy a quarter unit, a half unit. I'm going to own these wells. These things are going to produce oil. I don't have to do anything. And I'm just going to collect a check every single month. And all I need to do is send you, you know, $67,500 or $134,500. And I'll own you either a quarter unit or a half unit, or the full units are going to be $250,000. And I can just send you money and you'll send me money back. And I get a tax write-off because it's considered oil and energy. Mm-hmm. And so worst case scenario, if something doesn't work out, I was able to get about 80, 85% of that as a tax credit. I thought, you know, being back in the day, this was my early years of investing. Okay, I'll start small. Here's 67, quarter unit. Bam, like clockwork. I was getting 2K checks a month. Ran that for like 6 months. I was like, this is working. Wow. And this goes 5 to 8 years before the well dries up? Really? Okay, cool. Let's do 135. Bam, 135. Started getting 4K checks every single month. Oh, dang, dude, this is really working. This is when I found out about the Ponzi scheme stuff, right? Oh, okay. You got an opportunity. It's only for investors that have invested, that are family and friends, that have done more than two deals. Okay, sure. This is a home run. You already hit the oil. You're showing me videos of this thing exploding in the air. All right. Yeah, here's 250. Let's go big on this one. You know, I got caught in putting my hard-earned cash and my reserves into somebody else's pocketbook that they ended up defrauding all these people. And they said that, you know, the wells ran dry and they needed, you know, all these different, you know, geographical testings and undergrounds and archaeologists. And they needed to just do all this stuff in the winter and the freezing and the trucks. And it was every excuse in the world. And I hired a private investigator and I tried to do everything that I could. And I went to litigation and they were bankrupt and they closed this and they closed that. And they took me for over, you know, $500,000. I only received about 150 back and I had a 350K loss. And at that point in time, I realized that you can't just take the easy way. You can't just send somebody money and expect something. And you need to be in control of what you're doing and where you're investing your capital and really do your due diligence. So that happened, you know, when I was, you know, 28 years old, 15 years ago. And my investments since then have been a lot different. And I've had a lot of successful investments. But that one almost put me out of business, you know, because when you lose 350K and you got vendors to pay and you were using capital that, you know, was supposed to be to pay your vendors and you thought that everything was going to be good. And we're hitting 2011 right now. And I didn't know what a recession was. I didn't know that this whole world can close down when there's a recession. I wasn't taught about recessions. I didn't know about a recession. Luckily, my customer base in colleges was recession proof because people still went to college and they still figured out a way to buy a $25 sweatshirt to go on cruise, even though there was a recession. So a lot of other companies were closing down, print companies, my competitors, because corporate companies were not ordering promotional products and wearables, mm-hmm. and they were cutting back on the things that they know they can cut back on. And that was the only thing that saved me. So I got really lucky because I could have went BK. And that would have been a big learning lesson is when you have cash and you have reserves, you know, don't think that it's just always going to be there and you need to plan for a rainy day. And you need to be blessed when you have cash reserves and you need to figure out how to get more cash reserves. So keeping your powder dry is a big thing. My dad always said, you know, and I didn't understand what keep your powder dry meant. until I didn't have any powder and I was out in the cold and I was trying to figure out where my next income is coming from and how I'm paying the vendors to keep my business and my employees.
So that was 08, right?
Correct. Yeah. So 08, 9, 10, it just kept on going, right?
And when did Bernard Madoff get caught? In those years, right? When all of a sudden the economy was tanking and all of a sudden they couldn't raise any funds at those points.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when you're running that type of scheme where it's like, you know, the well runs dry, really, like the well, it is extremely challenging. And I didn't think that that could happen to me. At that moment in time, I think it was really an aha moment. And I said, you know what? We're going to do things differently. We're going to be more conservative. This isn't always going to be roses, and business is tough, and I need to get tougher. And I learned some very big lessons. I had to bring in consultants to help me figure out like why my business wasn't doing good, why I had so much waste, how much I was overpaying, you know, different departments or salespeople, how I could run my margins differently.
So you were actively
seeking, because I didn't have cash, I had to figure out how to make it more profitable.
Better, yeah.
And I didn't know how to do that without, and I had this big heart and I wouldn't let people go. That was another thing in business. You know, it's like everybody says hire slow, fire quickly, right? I was hiring fast and I was firing very, 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 very slow. I was literally trying to be friends with all my employees because I was in my 20s. And there were so many employees that took advantage because of how nice I was being. And I've learned in business that you're actually going to be respected more if you stick by your guns and you're not always the nice guy. They respect you because they feel more secure in the way that your business is going to be ran and their family. And when you're nice to everybody and you're always like, oh, you need an extra $300 advance this week? You need a raise. Just do me a favor and just make this extra run to UPS and I'll go ahead and have that $500 advance for you. You don't even know how many advances and how many employee advances and how many loans I didn't get paid back to my employees. So that's rule number one. You know, you don't loan employees money. You know, they understand what their role is. They understand what their compensation is. And the second you start being their bank, you're no longer their employer.
You give them an inch, they'll take a mile.
And that's exactly what it was. Like, you know, the second they started hanging out with you outside of work, they just felt like, you know, okay, we're buddies. And so I don't really hang out with anybody that works for me right now besides my partners. Nothing against them, but if we do a company event, yes, we will have dinner. We will go out. We will celebrate. There's a happy hour or something like that, but we're not hanging out on the weekends. We're not best friends. We're here to get some work done. And there's a strict line of, you know, what you need to do on your side of the table and what I need to do on my side of the table.
So you had a lot of sales training prior. You had this moment where the company was, you know, you had to rubber meets the road. And you said you brought in some consultants, some people who helped you. How did that process go? Who'd you bring in and how did it work?
You know, one of them's name's like Gulf Consultants or something like that. You know, they were older gentlemen. This gentleman named Ron Paradise really was like amazing. Funny story, for those of you guys who know Brett Tanner, he's over running the fund with Gary. Keller of Keller Williams, and he runs an amazing business, Brett Tanner. He actually came in and looked at my apparel business and wanted to buy it and partner with me. And we were going to, you know, build it and exit. And I, back in the day, I was like, oh no, you don't know anything about t-shirts. But he knew stuff about business that I didn't know. I thought you had to be an expert in t-shirts or pest control or roofing or solar or flooring. You don't have to be an expert in the thing that you're doing. You have to be an expert at business, right? So that was another big aha moment that I looked at, because Brett Tanner is now worth hundreds of millions of dollars and, you know, just an amazing, amazing businessman, which he's always been. And that was a look back of like, wow, I could have partnered with somebody like that. He saw something in me. He looked at my financials. He said, we can take it here. And I said, no, let's not. And Brett and me and this Ron Paradise consultant guy were in one room. And I asked Brett to come down and meet with this consultant with me because we were thinking about moving forward. And then I moved forward with the consultant and I told Brett, no thanks, but thanks. And the consultant and me had a great experience until he retired. And he ran all of New York police departments and Streets of New York, actually, pizza franchise called Streets of New York. And it was Phoenix Suns used Streets of New York. The Arizona Cardinals used Streets of New York. And so he was already running like their accounting and consulting. And so I learned a lot from him. And it was really a blessing because he was the third consulting company that I hired. The first one took all my money and they were charging me like $2,500 a day to be in my office. And they had like three people there in suits. And I only lasted about 4 days with them. And I had to pay a stipend for their food, the airfare. It was just crazy, right? And wow. I was like, oh my God, this is putting me more. And they're telling me how horrible of a businessman and a business I run. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, right? That was a bad idea. And then the second one, I actually met Ron and he was the one who came as a consultant for the company. And then me and him talked and he said, look, you know, I'm actually going to be, you know, kind of wrapping up. This was going to be my last job. If it's okay with you, I really think that you have something special. I really liked our conversation. I'd be happy to call the company that I work for and ask them as a favor, because this was my last job before retirement, if I could give back to a young entrepreneur and do this one, you know, just alone with us. And if they want a commission or they want something, I'll take care of that. So he did that and they agreed because of everything that he's done prior. So one thing happened that was so good was he was able to come in and really work with me and run my flash reports weekly. I had reports on my desk of everything that I needed to make moves in the business. My pulse was just, everything was, finger was on the pulse. And my team and my employees, they were just respecting me and they were working harder and we were making more money. And I started getting bigger accounts when the Super Bowl came in and Super Bowl 49. And I was referred as the best decorator and the NFL came to my shop. And 8 years later, we were doing Super Bowls and it opened up the doors. And that's where I was able to, you know, look at a company that had those types of accounts. And Ron said, okay, it's time to sell. We have 3 years of strong financials, your growth, your sales are up. We fixed everything. And he stuck with me for 3 years. He told me he would only give me 1 year. And he was a big mentor in mine. So any business people out there, I would find people, not big companies, I would find individuals that clearly have delivered for their clients and that take a direct passion in you as an individual, not their paycheck or their commission, and just make a relationship with somebody, because there's a lot of smart businessmen that have gone the direction and gone the distance, and all they have left is to give back and pass that baton and make a difference in some young entrepreneur's life. So please, please, please go out and find those people. They are there. And that's what mentorship's all about, giving back.
So did he do this pro bono or?
No, absolutely not. No, I took care of him. I paid him. He was in my office 2 times a month for about 3 to 4 hours each time. And he would give me direction and he would make sure I stayed on target. And anything that came up or any idea that I had and anything I wanted to run by him, he was able to, you know, assist me with in making clear directions.
Yeah. Man, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, to it just really have, does. I'm very jealous.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you go about finding someone like that?
Well, like I said, I was interviewing consultant companies that were calling me saying, hey, you know, are you interested in, you know, how's your business going? Would you like to
what
anything?
Would you recommend to someone like me if I was like, man, I could, you know, I've always thought
I think LinkedIn right now, yeah. I think if you could find somebody that was a business consultant or an independent consultant and you can interview 5 people and find the one that doesn't necessarily you know, talk about how much they get paid and how much they're compensated and how much they're going to do for you, and find the one that really is asking you the questions about who you are and what your passions are and what your vision is and where you want to go, and figure out, like, you know, that type of relationship where it's more personable, not business, because that's the one person that you want to get personable with and you want to go to dinner with and you want to invite your wife, and you, that's the person that you want to let your guard down with, is your mentor in your business or your consultant in your business, because the more they care about you, the more they're going to do for you, and you should compensate them as much as you can along the way, because it only lights the fuel to their fire. And, you know, they love seeing you making more money and them being appreciated. All it is appreciation. There's too many mentors out there. For example, my partner, Cody, bless his heart, he's been in the education space for 20 years with Clever Investor, and he's gotten so much fulfillment out of it. But there was a time where he just felt like, you know what? It's not the same as it used to be. It seems like, you know, people are just taking and taking and taking and taking and not wanting to, you know, give back. And the education space has changed, and people have changed, and technology has changed, and courses have changed, and it's time for me to make a change. And so that's when he exited Clever Investor in December and sold the company. And so it's a big moment for us right now as partners, as friends. Cody and I was gave the speech at Cody's wedding when he got married in 2008, 16 years ago. And we've been just really great friends. We met in 2004 in Mexico, and we don't really look back. We own multiple businesses. We're talking about Daddy. This is Floor Daddy, this FD on this hat right here. And we started a new flooring business 5 months ago that we're really excited about. And we have some great partners and great friends. Mike Freeman and Jonathan Tesmer are two of our partners, in addition to our newest partner, which is Tommy Mello. And so that's not really known from any real podcast or anything, kind of under the scenes right now. But Tommy recently got $1 billion valuation on his A1 garage company. And so we're gonna expand the flooring business, and we're gonna use his model of home service businesses that he was able to establish in the garage space in flooring, and then eventually we'll roll it out to roofing and solar and insulation and kitchen and bath, and the Daddy will be a household name that we can all be proud of. So it just goes along with your podcast of being a dad and taking care of business at the same time.
Yeah, hell yeah, man. So how are you being? I mean, you got a lot of business stuff going on. How are you like making time for family?
You know, my wife, bless her heart, Beata, she's been a biology major. She went through pharmacy and she went through nursing. So she's always been in the medical field. And we recently retired my wife, and she is traveling with me. She's coming on my events with me. We're bringing our daughter with us. My daughter came with my wife to, you know, our Bend, Oregon trip. We just spent a month in Europe together in June that you know of. Mm-hmm. We took a month off and just went and traveled all through Poland. And my wife's from Poland. Her mom lives there. So every few years we get a chance to go back, and we bring Bailey. And, you know, we went to Italy and stayed in a really nice Airbnb right overlooking the water and the beach in Positano. So we take the time to go enjoy our fruits of our labor.
So they're just like, so now you're just, whatever you're doing, they're kind of just in tow, and, you know, your wife's responsible for the kiddo. And
my wife's an agent. So, you know, she's, you know, doing her thing, and she finds real estate investment opportunities for me to take advantage of. She earns commission as an agent, as a buyer broker, and she's helping with some of the design stuff for our new build. We're building a new house in Sedona right now that we're going to turn into a short-term rental. So she's choosing everything through the mood boards, and, you know, she's just doing passion projects and things that she enjoys, not because she needs to or has to, but it's all about figuring out how to do stuff that you like and not be pressured by the timelines and, you know, the stress of you have to do this or else. So getting to that point has been a blessing and a lot of hard work. And I'm 43 and I never really thought about, wanting to stop or wanting to quit or wanting to retire. As long as I'm doing what I enjoy, it doesn't feel like work. So hurry up and figure out how to do things that you can enjoy, and the less it will feel like work.
So you kind of give your weekends to your family for the most part, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, none of my businesses require me on the weekends. Obviously, I'm a realtor as well. And so I mostly list all my own properties, friends and family. I don't really work with people outside of there. And so it's really pretty something I enjoy, you know, talking to other agents, selling houses on the weekend. I don't do open houses. I don't do any of that stuff. But, you know, working on the phone to me is all day, every day. I enjoy, you know, being able to be flexible and be on the beach and get work done on the phone. And if I need to turn it off, I have great executive assistants that can take over at any time for me. But for the most part, you know, I'm making deals happen and I love what I do and it doesn't feel like work.
Do you get stressed out?
Of course, you know, everything comes with its pressures.
Super chill.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say that I don't get stressed out. I think that stress and how you handle certain situations is one of the things that I've learned the most. It's all about how you react, right? So the more stressful reaction that you have to things, everything's going to always be thrown at you. Life is full of curveballs. You will get slapped in the face, hit in the face. Get the hardest thing out of the way in the morning, right? That's why a lot of people do the ice bath. They work out first thing in the morning. They do all these different things to just get the hard thing out of the way, because everything else that comes at you in that day is not going to be as hard as what you just did. So it's going to feel easier. So anybody that, you know, is up and going ice bathing and, you know, getting the workout in and beating themselves up in the morning, it deflects some of the things that come throughout the day. So I enjoy to, you know, get the hard things out of the way as well. But I don't know, you know, some of me is just like, I have been through a lot of different things and it doesn't bother me that, you know, the pool pop-ups are not working and a gear needs to be fixed. And unfortunately there's leaves in the pool and the Airbnb guest that showed up wants a full refund because they can't swim in a dirty pool and my pool guy can't get there. And all those things are going to happen. How are you going to let them affect you? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If a deal falls through because an inspector blows up an inspection report and sees some cosmetic cracks on a foundation, but there's no signs of interior cracks or anything wrong on the foundation, but the buyer is scared now and he doesn't want to get an expert opinion that specializes in foundation repairs to come out, how are you going to change their mind to keep that deal together when they're first time home buyers and their dad says, you're not moving forward with this and this. You can't control the uncontrollables. So anything that's going to be thrown at you, you're just like, okay, this will pass. It's like everything else. And you just deal with it and you get it handled. And the quicker you can get something handled, the quicker you can move on to the next problem, because there's always going to be a problem. So I like to look at life as being a problem solver. And I hope that when my daughter understands the challenges of this person's bullying me or this person's doing this, or, you know, I'm not, you know, being a starter on my basketball team, that's a problem. How are you going to fix it? Let's worry about the solution, because you're going to get 5 more problems tomorrow and you can't live your life just being stressed out. Yeah. Always about, you know, what's wrong in life and how tough life is. So be the best problem solver you can be and keep your stress level down.
Amen. Damn, words of wisdom.
Oh, a lot of it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of different businesses and I probably didn't name 5 of them, 10 of them, 15 of them. So yeah, it's the entrepreneur always has his mind going and always is trying to, you know, figure out ways to make money and do different things. I think what I'd like to do is, what at some point in my life through my foundation, I have a foundation set up is, you know, really figure out like what really makes me happy and how to make a big difference on, you know, the world, right? That's like big thinking. Like our elephant development company, Green Elephant Development, we give back a percentage of our proceeds on our new builds to elephant conservation.
Hmm.
And my dream is to actually go to the sanctuary in Africa and go visit the elephants that we've been saving and go and enjoy an African safari trip. And that's cool and it's great, but it's like, is that my mission on life, is to save elephants in Africa? Or is there something else that also will provide that fulfillment for me? And I haven't figured that out yet. And so I hope that, you know, I figure it out soon, because I know that when I do, it's going to be really special.
Are you feeling unfulfilled right now?
No, it's just that you're always looking forward, because if you don't have something to look forward to, it's almost like if you're not growing,
yeah,
you're
dying,
extinct.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things about life is, you know, always be looking forward and always have, you know, clear direction of where you're going, because otherwise you're just turning left to turn right, to turn left, to turn right, to turn left, and then to turn right. Like, you really have to have a roadmap of, you know, where it is, where, what destination it is that you're going for. 'Cause you'll get pulled in all these different directions if not.
If you could go back in time.
Yeah.
Asked the question earlier. I like it though. Back in time to at some point where you would have liked advice. Could be your 20s, could be your teens. What would you go back and tell yourself?
I wish I would have started real estate earlier. I think real estate really is the key to financial freedom. Not only financial freedom, but just freedom in general. Like it really, the passive income, every t-shirt order, every, you know, big event that I got stressed out about, if these 2000, you know, products didn't show up by 2 p.m. on Tuesday for them to wear by 4 p.m. that day, otherwise the whole order gets shipped back on FedEx and it gets returned to me. As soon as I got over like, oh my God, the world's going to stop, it was just like, I get it. Life is about simplicity. And real estate pays you when you sleep. And that's pretty simple. And it doesn't come with as much stress, because overall real estate will double every 15 years. And overall rents will go up. And overall, if you provide a good product for your tenants, they're going to pay their rent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where I don't know if it's Section 8, you know, because Section 8, a lot of people get a lot of fulfillment over, because they feel like they're helping the people that really can't be helped. And the government's taking care of the bill. And so it relieves some of their financial stress.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to work with the Section 8 people to collect the money, but they're helping the Section 8 people. And so it might be something, you know, up my sleeve, where I want to do something like that. We talked about the boxables, and we talked about the modulars, and we talked about affordable living. And we really think that's a thing of the future. And I really agree, like providing roofs over people's heads and fixing some of this homeless stuff is something that I have a passion for. You know, I definitely think that.
Yeah, I know. That's my big, what I really focus on. Well, you know, in part with this podcast, you know, we didn't plan on this when we started this, but we found out how much of it's felt like a community service effort. Being a good dad has been important, you know, and we've got a lot of guys who are like, you're like, hey, no, I'm super active in my kid's life. We have some guys who are like, yeah, my dad wasn't around, I didn't have this. And some of those stats for fatherless homes, homeless people without dads, it's like the homeless population, it's huge. Drug abuse, people without dads, it's huge.
Okay.
And so it's part of the reason why we're like so focused on, you know, hey, have a good relationship with your kids, because it matters.
Mm-hmm.
We have an interview with a guy scheduled for later this month. In August. He started a charity in Southern California, where what they did was they set up a location just to have people wash, homeless individuals wash their clothes, wash their clothes, get haircuts, take showers. Yeah. And the point was that these people who might want to get off the street don't feel comfortable trying to get off the street, because their clothes, living on the street, is super dirty, and they can't even go to a laundromat because they get kicked out.
Mm.
So they can't stay clean. They might want to. So they provided this this entire mobile location where they set up these units to help these individuals, and we're interviewing this month. And he's a broker, a mortgage broker. That's what he's doing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys. I mean, honestly, it's been a pleasure sharing some of my business experience and what I've learned, and how it's transpired into being a dad. And appreciate you guys inviting me on here.
I appreciate you being so bluntly honest with your entire journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really awesome.
Transparency is key, man. And right now we're launching a $50 million equity fund at clevercapitalfund.com. We have our Clever Summit coming up September 13th, 14th, and 15th in Hollywood, Florida. We're expecting 3,000 students and, through the Clever Investor community to come. Great speakers like Ryan Searhant from Million Dollar Listing and Owning Manhattan, and Patrick Bet David, Pace Morby, Jamil Damji, of course, Cole Hatter, Dan Fleischman, Cody Sperber. We're all going to be there celebrating. I've invited you to come along. And
I'll be there.
And come. And so we're going to hang out in 7 weeks in Florida and throw a really good event and give back to the community that's got us this far.
That's great.
If someone wants to attend that event, how do they do that?
CleverSummit.com. Early bird specials are ending this Sunday night at midnight. So you can get your tickets right now for $97 for general admission. And I think VIP is like $297 right now for the front. Yep. And if you're interested in working with any of our development companies and commercial and properties or investments and getting some of that passive income with a trusted operator that is not going to, do some of the stuff
with
the oil and gas, and you don't have to worry about oil coming out of the ground, and it's backed by back secured against real estate, check out clevercapitalfund.com. We pay 10, 12, and 14% returns every single quarter, direct deposits in your bank account for accredited investors only. It's an amazing opportunity to get some supplemental income if you got some side money.
Great.
Cool.
Great. Is your fund launched?
Yes.
Did it start?
Yes. Absolutely. Right. Yep.
Brian, we got to have you back.
I'd love to.
Yeah. We need a 1 year update.
Cool.
Yeah, get the update on
yeah, Floor Daddy is going to keep on going. So I love that, we're going to expand into different home service businesses, and it's going to, the daddy's going to be a real big household name. Hopefully one day bigger than GoDaddy.
Love it. I don't even know who that is. The only one I know right now is
They came out with the big Super Bowl. It was Dan Patrick.
I know who they are.
My bad. All right, guys.
Right on.